From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, and welcome to another edition of the radio program heard from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west all the way east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Great to be with you, and I have got something very special for you tonight. His name is Rodney Barker, and he is authored of let me tell you, Sunday on Dreamland, Linda Moulton Howe interviewed Rodney Barker. His book is called And the Waters Turned to Blood. I repeat, And the Waters Turned to Blood. It's not fiction. It's real. It involves something going on off the coast of North Carolina, and maybe way beyond that, something changing in our ocean. It'll scare the hell out of you. It did me. And when Linda Moulton Howe finished her report on Dreamland Sunday, I said, oh my God, I've got to get this guy on the air. And so he's going to be on the air here in a few minutes. I've got a couple of things I've got to take care of. For example, pleasurable duties like welcoming new affiliates, KEELAM, in Shreveport, Louisiana. A biggie, 5 kilowatts, non-directional, regional on 710. Welcome in Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm telling you, you are in for quite a ride, folks. This is a very different kind of radio program, as you will find out. Welcome to KHJJ AM 1380 in Lancaster, California. Great to have you on board, and that fills in a nice little hole there in Lancaster. And welcome to KAAA. Now, these are people who, when they picked their call letters, wanted to be in front of the phone book, I think. Now, that wouldn't get you there. You're still a K. Anyway, KAAA in Kingman, Arizona, 1300 on the AM dial. Welcome. All right, my other big announcement is today is the release date for my book. It is called The Quickening. It's hardcover only. It's big. It's 336 pages. It is probably, you know, everybody tells me never say never. It's the definitive work that I will ever do on this subject, certainly. I think it may be the best work ever done on a subject of this sort, but that's my, you know, big-headed view. Today is the release date. Now, they were absolutely mobbed beyond redemption today already with people wanting to order the book. So I'm going to give you some advice with what I'm going to tell you. The Quickening is just an absolutely beautiful book. To give you an idea, Danion Brinkley said, a vast amount of information and research is in this book. The quickening will help you either control your destiny or be swept away by it. Danion Brinkley. Brad Steiger said, prepare to be enlightened and frightened. Art Bell astutely illuminates the challenges and promises of the 21st century. Whitley Strieber says, finally, someone has the guts and courage to just state it plainly, the world is blowing up in our faces. Wow, what a read, Whitley Strieber. So it's out. I know a lot of you have been waiting a long time for it. I'm going to give out one number only, and I'm going to tell you that number is going to be in gridlock, and your best shot to get a copy of the... Oh, there is one more important thing. Until I can't handle it anymore, I'm going to be signing autographed copies. First edition autographed copies. Not as we did last time with stickers, but really signing it. So, all I can tell you is, if you want an autographed copy, order now. And I will let you know when it ends. In other words, when I've signed so much, I can't sign anymore. And then there will be no more autographed copies. So if you want a first edition autographed copy, here's the number. I'm going to give it to you right now. You can try it, but the odds are pretty good you're not going to get through. Your best chance is after 8 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Time. After 8 a.m. Eastern Time, the quickening is here. And by the way, it will ship immediately. You know, you'll have it within 10 days. The number is 1-800-864-7991. That's 1-800-864-7991. Now, if you want to see what the book looks like, the cover of the book is on the website as of now at www.artbell.com. www.artbell.com. And if you just want to send in a check, it's $24.95 plus $5 shipping and handling. It's just like my last book. I will give you an address. If you want to order by check or money order, the address is, are you ready? Paper Chase Press, 8175 South Virginia Street. That's 8175 South Virginia Street, Suite 850D. That's 850D as in Denmark. In Reno, Nevada. Reno, Nevada. Zip code 89511. 89511. As a matter of fact, they will ship it to you now in 5 to 10 working days. If you want priority shipping, they can even arrange that. And I'm not going to go into right now what the quickening is about, because tonight's show is part of it. And I will go into a more detailed trip here in the next hour about the book. Now, to Los Angeles and Rodney Barker. Rodney, are you there?
I am, Art.
Thank you for coming on the program with such short notice.
Well, I'm pleased to be here, and let me say congratulations. I think we both know the personal investment that goes into writing a book, and to be your guest on the publication date of your own book is an honor for me.
I equate it to giving birth. It's kind of
like as close as we can come to knowing that.
Yeah, as we'll ever know, that's right. So thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited about it all, and I'm very excited about your book as well. It's called And the Waters Turn to Blood, and we're going to get to why that title in a moment. But first, tell me something about yourself. Who is Rodney Barker?
Well, thanks for asking. My home is Santa Fe, New Mexico, but I am a former newspaper editor, magazine writer, and nonfiction author of four books who really goes where my stories take me. And the first book took me to Japan, second book was set me in the Southwest, the third book took me to Moscow, and if you're interested, I can tell you how it led to my fourth book, which is And the Waters Turn to Blood.
Well, I am. I was in Moscow not long ago. It's a strange place.
It certainly is.
Anyway, you were. What's the Moscow connection?
Well, my previous book was called Dancing with the Devil, and what I did was revisit the Marine spy scandal of the late 80s, when Marines were being seduced by KGB beauties and allowing them into the Moscow embassy.
Oh, yes.
And yet, after all the pronouncements by Cap Weinberger of this being this great breach in security, there was only one prosecution, and it was a fellow named Clayton Lone Tree. There were some interesting sort of irregularities about that whole court-martial, and with the end of the Cold War, I thought, here's a tremendous research opportunity. So I went over to the old Soviet Union and actually almost put together my own operation. I hired some disgruntled ex-KGB people and to learn what happened over there on the Soviet side, how many secrets were compromised, and the whole sort of seduction of Westerners that was part of the sexual recruitment. I learned about that strategy and to meet the women who were involved in that, too.
You actually interviewed the women?
Mm-hmm.
Must not have. Was that a hard duty?
Well, yeah, I kept waiting for one of them to sort of run at me. No, it was interesting because certainly the KGB people I worked with, one of the strategies that I use in my investigative research art is to look for disgruntled ex-employees. And that can be true for anything. And, I mean, the people living on pensions over there with the KGB are disgruntled.
Oh, yes.
The women were extremely expendable. I mean, they were used on the service of the state at a certain time and have been dropped. And so they have are disillusioned in a lot of ways. Some of them actually got involved in that because they were hoping that their seduction of Westerners would lead for a ticket out of the Soviet Union.
Well, listen, there's a lot of groups now in Russia, as I'm sure you're aware, that are inviting American men over to meet, marry, and take away Russian women.
That's
right. I mean,
right.
Big
you
trade
bet.
In that right now.
You bet, yeah.
I do remember the scandal you talked about, and I remember the networks showing a photograph of one particularly, incredibly, strikingly beautiful
yep.
A Russian woman.
I believe her name was Violetta, and you know, I got to learn about Violetta and her background and what it was like to grow up in that society. I became very close with her mother and sister. She was very guarded and wary, and she had what they look for when they are looking to recruit people to work for the security services over there, and it was described, interestingly enough, as Judas properties.
Judas properties. That's appropriate, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so anyway.
So anyway, how that leads to this book is that there was a retired intelligence officer who was involved in that investigation who said to me, listen, when this book is done, I'd like you to come down and visit with me in North Carolina and go fishing. And he had a boat. And this was in the fall of 1995. In October, and I went down to North Carolina to go fishing, fully expecting to have an enjoyable fishing trip. And we canceled that because it was the end of a season of fish kills in which they say some 40 million fish were dying in the estuaries of North Carolina.
What? 40 million?
40 million over the course of that summer. And I didn't know much about this, and so instead of going...
I'm sorry to stop you, Roger.
Yeah, sure.
40 million, when was that, please?
This was the summer of 1995.
95?
So we're talking just about a year and a half ago, coming up on almost 2 years ago.
I mean, that by itself should have been a world-class headline story. 40 million fish dying in the estuaries there in North Carolina. North Carolinians, prepare yourself. What you're going to hear is going to scare the hell out of you. But why wasn't that major world-class news in 95?
Well, actually, CNN covered it. A lot of the national media covered it. It was fragmentary. North Carolina, understandably, did not want to have a lot of publicity out on it. But it was reported. There have been fish kills in our coastal waters for quite some time, but certainly nothing like this before.
What was killing them?
Well, that was what I didn't know until I went over to a meeting instead of going fishing, and it was a meeting of state officials, and there were angry fishermen and crabbers, and there were some scientists there, and that's where I first learned about what has been called the cell from hell.
The cell from hell. The cell from hell. Good name when you hear, folks, what this thing is. Linda, when I listened to the interview yesterday, Linda said this cell is part animal, part plant. Okay, is that true?
Well, actually, not exactly. It comes from the family called a dinoflagellate. And a dinoflagellate can be part plant, part animal. And in its animal form, it is responsible for things like the red tides we've heard about. As far as the animal form, there's been nothing before known like the creature that causes the kills in the North Carolina estuaries, again, which is not a plant, it is an animal.
It's an animal. It's an animal. Then it's, what class of animal is this?
Well, I mean, it is a unique creature that lives in the sediment on the bottom of the estuaries that they believe has been around for millions of years, lying dormant, and has only been in the past few years that this thing has emerged and is releasing this incredible toxin. This thing is like the character out of the figure out of Alien. It's a shape-changing little organism that enlarges in size and releases a very, very powerful neurotoxin.
We are talking, are we not, about a microorganism?
We are. They are. And yet, when you see pictures of it as it goes through its changes, I mean, it looks like something from outer space. I mean, it is like almost like a science fiction story. This little organism enlarges, goes through these different changes, and turns into a powerful, really mini sea monster.
May I ask this? Do you have microscopic photographs of this thing?
Yeah, there are pictures in the book. Not a lot of pictures, but there's a picture of the organism, not only as it's seen enlarged, but also, as we'll get to, I'm sure, a little later, feeding on human blood.
Feeding on human blood. All right, Rodney, so everybody knows your work is not fiction, and
no.
Everything you're telling us is dead true fact. And actually, you wrote about the botanist, I guess, who discovered all this, is that correct?
I certainly do. It's mainly her told through her eyes. It's her story and her discovery. And it's been confirmed in prestigious scientific journals around the world.
All right. Stay right where you are, Rodney, and we'll be back to you. Rodney Barker and the Waters Turn to Blood is my guest. Stand by, North Carolina. Now, back to Los Angeles, and Rodney Barker. Rodney, all right. You said something just prior to the break about human blood. What does this new horrible little thing, killing fish, have to do with human blood?
Well, what happened, Art, is that the way this whole story evolved is that in North Carolina, there was a mysterious mortality in the veterinary school with the fish pathologists, and something was killing the fish that they didn't know what, couldn't explain it. And the scientist there who was working with it finally gave up, and he turned for help to a female aquatic botanist named Dr. Joanne Burkholder. And this woman, over the next couple of years, identified what the killer was.
Was she? Was she at a university?
Yeah, North Carolina State University.
North Carolina State, okay.
And she discovered that there was this little organism that would live in the bottom of the tank, that would come up and release this powerful toxin that was killing fish, and then it would go back down. She, about 2 years after that, tracked it to the estuaries and found that was its natural setting. In the process of doing studies and experiments on it, she became ill and her lab assistant began to sort of suffer from problems that were not immediately apparent. They were insidious the way they developed, and he began to manifest symptoms that the doctors thought was either premature Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, or Parkinson's syndrome, and they didn't realize that what it was, this organism, the toxin that it releases to kill fish, is a neurotoxin that gets airborne. It aerosolizes.
It gets airborne.
And they were breathing it and didn't know it, and it was having those chronic effects on them.
Of course, they were, I guess, investigating very concentrated...
Not really.
No?
She was hit by these strong cultures, but he was over a period of time. It was more dilute cultures. And so there we have two examples where researchers, one exposed to it acutely, and then the other exposed to it over a period of time on more lower levels, both begin to exhibit these kinds of symptoms.
Oh, my. Now, I've heard a million stories around the country about fish swimming in circles.
Yeah, I've heard more of those too.
Is that related to this in any way?
It's really hard to know. I mean, I think that this situation that our waters are continuing to be contaminated by a variety of sources, and that they are manifesting problems in wildlife, that then neurologically is something that's on the increase. It's hard for me to speak to the specific situations because I don't want to overspeak. I think the water needs to be analyzed. The scientists need to come in on this. But certainly it is ominous.
This is the CBC Radio Network.
Here's from, the Wilmington, Delaware Sunday News Journal. The headline is, Sores on Fish Baffle State Officials. It says state environmental officials are mystified by what is causing lesions and open sores that appear on fish that are now being harvested, and it's horrible, and even catfish, and they don't understand at all what it is. Now, this is all the way up in Delaware and Maryland.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about, this organism, the epicenter of the problem is clearly North Carolina, for reasons we can talk about. But this scientist has found this organism as far north as Delaware. It was responsible for wiping out an aquaculture facility in the Chesapeake Bay last summer. She's found it in all along the coast in South Carolina, Georgia, all the way around Florida, and all the way over to Mobile Bay, Alabama.
All right, the next obvious question before we investigate this further is, where the hell did this thing come from?
Yeah, well, it's a story that I believe that, you know, you thematically you address in your book, Art. They believe the organism has probably been around for millions of years, lying dormant and benign in the bottoms of the coastal waters, and it was changing environmental conditions that brought it up. What happened is that over the past 30, 40 years in North Carolina, you've had rapid growth, you've had industrial growth, and you had the pesticides being put on the tobacco farms, and all that runoff has been going to the waters and washing down to the coastal areas. And it poised the system for one more big thing, and what happened is that North Carolina, seeing the writing on the wall about tobacco, courted the swine industry. And now North Carolina is number two behind Iowa in hog production, and they courted them with lax environmental laws, and the effluent from all that corporate hog farming has been going into the rivers, and what we're talking about is a toxic soup down there that has allowed this organism that was previously unknown to emerge and flourish and attack with a vengeance.
All right, do we know for sure that it's been there for millions of years?
No, this has to be the theory right now, and there's also precedent for these organisms being transported around the world in a variety of ways. Ballast water in ships is one big one.
This is such a terribly serious story that I want to be very careful to delineate between what we know and what is theory.
I appreciate that, and I do too. Right now they have found it almost everywhere they've looked. Water biologists have asked for Dr. Burkholder to come and either teach them how to identify this organism, or they have sent her samples where they are having mysterious die-offs of fish that are unexplained by normal circumstances. And even physicians are contacting her where they are seeing mysterious medical syndromes that sound similar to the kind that those exposed to this organism are exhibiting.
All right. What are the human symptoms?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that goes back to answering in a roundabout way about the human blood. What they're finding is that there are four routes of exposure where you can be personally affected by this organism. When it moves into its toxic stage and releases that toxin into the waters, it goes after fish, and it's fish it's going after. That toxin, if you come into hand contact, dermal contact, not only can you develop the same kinds of sores that are turning up on the fish, but that toxin can get into your system. So if you go water skiing, or you go swimming, or you're a child going to one of the camps down there in North Carolina, you can be exposed to it in the water just by touching the water. The second way is if you have a cut and it gets into your bloodstream, this thing has a voracious appetite for human blood. Now,
appetite.
Yeah, now it does. The good news is that apparently it eats itself to death. That it will eat and eat until it dies. But that is another route of exposure. The third we talked about is aerosolization. They're finding that there are people down in those coastal areas who are exhibiting the same kinds of symptoms that the researchers in the lab unknowingly exhibited.
All right, and again, I would like to make it clear, you're talking about open sores that don't heal?
I'm talking about open sores that don't heal. I'm talking about cognitive impairment. I'll move into more of it. We're talking about immune system suppression.
Really?
We're talking into a whole... The insidious thing about this organism is we don't fully understand all the health effects. And that is really disgraceful, because health officials were informed a number of years ago about the potential, and they have delayed investigating them. But I would say the fourth area possible a possible infection for people. An infection is probably the poor word, but pus contamination has to do with seafood. This toxin can not only kill fish by boring holes in them and by paralyzing it, but it can contaminate seafood. And they haven't even done studies to be absolutely sure that a lot of the seafood coming out of North Carolina is not infected with this toxin.
So you mean not just fish, but other seafood that would be harvested in
shellfish. So we're talking fin fish and shellfish being marketed nationally, coming out of North Carolina. Now let me say, Art, because we don't want to scare people unnecessarily.
You're scaring me.
Yeah, I know. For the most part, if you cook fish, it neutralizes toxins, but not all toxins. And that was why it's so important for that fishing industry there to be able to say to people, listen, we will give you meaningful scientific reassurance that our fish is safe. And right now they can't do that.
Who knew about this agency-wise, and how long ago?
Yeah, that's important, because what this story chronicles, Art, is the discovery process by this very determined and brave young scientist, female scientist, and the struggles and frustrations she has as she tries to bring it to the attention of the environmental and health bureaucracies in North Carolina, who at first resisted her findings. I almost came to feel there's a scientific equation that discovery equals skepticism plus jealousy. I mean, they kept demanding more science. They kept demanding more information. They didn't believe her. They put her off. And then when they finally were just compelled by the sheer amount of evidence to say there was a problem, they funded some money, and it became part of a scandal in terms of where the money went and who got it. And so we have very few answers now that we didn't have 3 years ago when the legislature there appropriated over $500 million.
God, we're idiots.
I know.
We're such idiots. We are literally destroying our world. And we are protecting that destruction politically because of money.
I think there's two things here. I think that our agencies, our health agencies, are crisis-driven. They wait until there is a clear health problem. People are actually just rolling over and dying before they'll respond sometimes, I think.
It reminds me of the ozone thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got measurements by NASA and by everybody else who's in space of the depletion of the ozone. We know at what rate it's going, although, by the way, it is now speeding up. And by the way, ozone certainly can't be ruled out as, the depleted ozone with the increased radiation, UV radiation, as something that might have keyed this as well.
Well, you're right, because we're talking about climate change as having an impact on this. I mean, a lot of sort of new and mysterious phenomena is going to be occurring as a result of the changes we're bringing to our environment, plus climatical changes that we have absolutely no control over.
I've got a very great deal on the changing climate, and again, it's part of my, very much a part of my book, The Quickening, but I'll get back to that. This has my mind blown. I would like to hear from some people in North Carolina. We can do that. We're heard extensively in North Carolina. And I'm sure, as a lot of people listen to this in North Carolina this morning, they're going, oh, my God. Or would you say they already know about it?
I just finished a week of touring in North Carolina, and it was on all the media. It was on TV and radio and print. I think a lot of them are familiar with it. I certainly would be glad to hear from any of the listeners, too, there. I mean, that state is in shock because from around the country, they've been getting calls from people who were planning their vacations there, who have friends who have retired there, or they wanted to retire there, or they were sending their kids to camp, and they want to know if it's safe. Now, clearly, not all of North Carolina faces this problem, but there are definitely sick rivers and estuaries and sounds there that are unhealthy places for people, particularly spring, summer, and fall.
Well, if the news has been big in North Carolina and reported widely, why in the hell hasn't it been reported nationally?
Well, now, Art, I'll tell you, I was on Good Morning America a week and a half ago. I debated with public health officials on CNN. So the word is getting out.
Well, no, wait. You debated with public health officials.
Yeah.
What was their side of it? What were
They came on and said that I was exaggerating the fear and that it was not as pronounced as I made it the case to be. And I refuted them with a letter that I'm looking at right now that they had not even been aware of. And that was is that 110 physicians 3 weeks ago wrote to Vice President Al Gore saying that these are physicians from the coastal counties of North Carolina saying physicians are notoriously uninvolved politically. However, we are seeing medical syndromes we do not understand. We feel they are connected to the rivers and to this organism there. And they're asking on that national level, Al Gore, because he has a history of being interested in environmental issues,
indeed,
to become involved in this issue.
110 physicians from North Carolina?
When I saw this letter and I went through the page after page of signatures, I was reminded of the first time I stood in front of the wall, the Vietnam Memorial, and looked at all those names.
Oh, my God. Well, Good Morning America is pretty good. CNN is pretty good. But, you know, until Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and companies say it on the evening news with a big in-depth story, it doesn't sink in.
I know. Well, that's why I'm so glad to be on your show, because even the New York Times science section 2 weeks ago had an article about it. But you know, this is getting out in a fragmentary way, and the opportunity to appear on shows like yours and reach a whole other audience is important.
I understand the economic impact for North Carolina of what you're saying, Rodney.
You bet. And
I'm sure you do, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we're not telling the people of North Carolina anything. Is there a campaign going on in North Carolina in some agencies, in your opinion, to keep this story minimized?
Well, you have a tough situation there because, I mean, tourism is a big industry.
Of course.
And so is the fishing industry. And they depend upon a clean and healthy environment. And while they privately have acknowledged to me, yeah, we got a problem and we should never have been in this situation, on the other hand, they don't want their immediate industry to be impacted.
Of course not.
So they're publicly going on the air and saying, listen, things are fine. Come on down. Don't worry about it. And then out there saying, well, yeah, I wish you could say that, but show us the scientific findings that can prove that, and let's have meaningful reassurance, not just optimistic proclamations.
Is there any way to make a determination about the speed of the spread of this?
I think you mean in North Carolina or up and down the coast around the country?
Well, or how it might spread, if it will spread, if it is spreading.
Well, let me say that the scientists have told us for quite some time that we can expect our coastal waters to be the breeding zones for these new and emerging harmful organisms if we continue to put population and pollution pressures on them. And if you look at our population migrations, it used to be from rural to urban. Now it's our coastal states that are increasing in population the most.
Yes.
So, I mean, it doesn't bode well for the future. Now, it may be this organism, and its scientific name, by the way, is Fisteria piscicida.
Wait a minute. Are you there?
I am.
Fisteria
piscicida is its scientific name. I mean, again, this scientist has found this wherever she's looked. It may be other organisms that are very similar to it, and that's why I'm in California, going to San Francisco and then Seattle, talking to other coastal areas here where they, too, are having what is called the fertilization of waters, changing the ecology and having new kinds of organisms emerging.
So, all right, I want to get this down. Fisteria, I've got, and give me the last one.
Piscicida. That it's Latin for fish killer.
Cida. Okay, piscicida.
Yeah. But it's clear that there are probably similar species lurking in the sediment all around the world, just awaiting the right environmental conditions to shift in their favor.
It's kind of like a bomb set to go off when it gets the right signal.
It certainly is. It's a ticking time bomb. And, I mean, third world countries don't have the kind of environmental controls that even we do are seeing these kinds of problems, too. I mean, it's a global issue.
What has happened to this very brave biologist?
Well, she is withstanding some withering criticism from state agencies and fellow colleagues, but she has also generated a great deal of support and sympathy. And I happen to know that there are proposals now that are being made to the governor that she be elevated to a position, a higher position than she is at the university, and she'd be able to devote full time and have financial resources to continuing the study of this organism and other dangerous organisms in the aquatic waters of in areas of North Carolina.
Do we have time?
Well, let me tell you this. This organism likes warm weather. Its main season is spring, summer, and fall. And that is also the height of tourist season.
In other words, we're coming into that season right now.
Yep. And if they have another summer like they had in 95, where another tens of millions of fish died, North Carolina is in real trouble.
All right. I'm going to restrict my line east of the Rockies to North Carolina is what I'm going to do. Stay put. You can rest for a few minutes, Rodney. If you're in North Carolina, your number is 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. Everybody else, please hold off. This is such a giant magnitude story that we better do a little investigative reporting here back into the state of North Carolina where we are heard absolutely widely. So stay right where you are. There's more to come. This is CBC.